Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. I got a texture that says, dang, that lack of sleep plus bad fan takes has R. Stanley fired up with a fire emoji.
Rob Rant.
I am a little cranky with no sleep. I apologize.
I'm afraid of you. I'm glad I'm in a different room.
Well, going on 4 hours of 4 hours of sleep. Sometimes you just get a little cranky. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be cranky.
You don't need to apologize at all. Nothing to apologize for, man.
Joe, we've talked a lot about David Poile and that discussion of whether or not the Predators need to move on from him. And that's a discussion that is going to continue here with Preds fans. I think we both know that. There's one part of this that I don't really understand and doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And it's the idea that, well, if David Poile loses Forsberg for nothing and he doesn't re-sign him, then you need to immediately fire David Poile. To me, like, you have to make a decision on that now if you're the Predators. Free agency begins on July 13th. So I guess, I mean, unless he just comes out right and says it, you're not going to know if you've lost Philip Forsberg until probably sometime around early July. Like, at some point there comes a point where you read the writing on the wall in this negotiation and you know that, you know, by the time end of June, early July comes around, he's probably going to test the market. Like, if you hadn't gotten the deal done by that point, you probably got a pretty good idea if you're David Poile. So maybe you could trade him for something around the draft and get something out of it. It won't be anything anywhere near what you could have gotten, but maybe it's, you know, a fourth round pick or a third round pick or something like that for the rights to Forsberg so some other team can give him an eighth year. I don't know. But this idea that, like, you have to wait that long and then make a decision on David Poile, well, if you wait that long, he's already drafting. He's already going into free agency. You're going to fire a GM right before the draft or right after the draft and before free agency? Like, to me, that just didn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, the timing of it doesn't line up. So, like, I understand if they lose Forsberg for nothing, obviously, that needs to be on David Poile, and he's going to have to answer for that. But the timing of it, to me, doesn't make a whole lot of sense because there's a chance. I mean, look, we saw this with Landeskog for the Avalanche last year. They were negotiating with him right up until the 11th hour. Free agency was about to start, and they were about to lose their eighth year on there, which I think he still ended up giving a 7-year deal, if I'm not mistaken. And they finally got a deal done with Landeskog. What if that's the way it goes with the Predators and it takes until the very last second before free agency begins to get a deal done with him? And then it falls through. Like, are you firing David Poile on July 12th, the day before free agency? Probably not. So that part of it, timing-wise, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Like, if you're making a decision on Poile, to me, it's now. It's not in 2 months.
Well, I'd agree. I also agree with what you said earlier, which is I don't think they're going to do anything with David Poile.
Yeah.
I mean, could be wrong. I think that one way or another, I'll keep circling back to Adam's column that dropped, you know, right after the game ended last night, Adam Vingan's column at The Athletic, which is, you know, the ownership, and Adam tried to go into this last season, you know, when things were really rough, and trying to get someone to comment from ownership about the state of the product, and it was, you know, Sean Henry spoke for them. That shouldn't happen. You know, they should answer questions about David Poile and how they see the direction of things going. What's the plan? What's the evaluation of David Poile? I mean, this is ultimately, it's customers and it's a product, and it's not cheap to support this product, you know, as Preds fans have done. And by the way, on the fan front, last night I was impressed. I actually thought after Saturday, I was like, is Monday going to be like a brutal, you know, like 20% empty kind of dead sort of atmosphere, you know, like, is it going to be worse? I mean, it's a freaking school night and a game that starts at basically 9 o'clock, which is ridiculous. Yeah. And I will say, and I knew even if it was 20% empty. You know, it's the hardcores are the ones who were there. Those are the people who were there at the very end cheering their team as they lapped around the ice and left. The fans did a great job last night. And frankly, the fans deserved better and deserve better.
Yeah, I thought it was a great environment last night at Bridgestone. Nate on the text line says, is there ever really the right time to fire someone? Yes, in professional sports, yes, there is.
Yeah, sometimes there's very obvious times to fire someone.
Like with Urban Meyer.
Now, and sometimes there's surprising times to fire someone like Mike Mularkey, since he's been his name has been invoked.
Or Barry Trotz.
Well, there you go. And again, there's a ton of, Jeremy Gover, I respect Jeremy's opinion a lot, and he had a long thread about Poile. And I think with any time anybody gets into the Poile thing, there's all these, necessary caveats, and they are necessary. I mean, everyone likes the guy. Everyone likes working with and for the guy. There's not anybody in hockey who doesn't like David Poile. There's not anybody who doesn't respect him either.
Sure.
Okay. And he really, his entire tenure here has been very impressive. It's not easy to get that kind of consistency. He was GMing with a hand tied behind his back for a lot of those years. All these things are true. And so it's hard for people, I think, especially been on the ride the whole time, to think of him just getting fired. And I think you're probably right, Robbie. There's just no way. But at the same time, this is high stakes professional sports. And I can't think of another example of a GM having this kind of tenure without championships to go with it. You win a championship, you win a cup here, a cup there, that buys you tons of time. If anybody has an example of something like this in American pro sports, I mean, I may be missing something. I'm asking honestly. I don't know.
Yeah,
but nothing comes to mind for me. It's a unique situation, and at some point, again, ownership. It's a different situation here. Hey, this is why the team's still here. So that's another part of the history that always has to be considered here, and maybe especially for new members of the fan base who jumped on 5 years ago, right? And the ownership group is a big part of the history of the franchise and a part of it being here. But like, someone's got to speak for those people to the fans.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Adam Vigan put up a great piece at The Athletic about that. Like, it's important for that to happen at some point. And look, like, if that does happen, like, I'm not expecting ownership to go out there and just like lay all their cards on the table. Like, Amy Adams Strunk does not reveal her grandmaster plans all the time when she talks for the Titans. I understand that. But it would be nice to hear from someone in the ownership group. We talked about that for years with the Titans. And I get it. It's not apples to apples comparison. It's an Adams family for the Titans, and it's an ownership group for the Predators. So it's different. It's not the same thing. But I think we need to hear from somebody in ownership. Tom Sigerin, to his credit, when he was the chairman, he was pretty out there and vocal, and Predators fans didn't always love what he said, but you heard from him. Like, I think that needs to happen more often with this ownership group.
And this is the time. Man, you're going to lose some people. I think you have lost some people. Raising prices on stuff, like after the run, they were still among the lowest in the league. That's totally what you should expect. Okay.
Yeah.
But this is also, when you talk about atmosphere, fan support, things like that, look, it's very challenging in pro or college sports to fill these arenas anymore. And this has been one of the best, I think, arenas in any sport over the last few years. But, I think you have an increasing number of people who are disillusioned by the spinning of the tires.
Yeah. And, JC and Goodsville saying, the only similar franchise is the Brown family with the Bengals. I mean, they're owners. I mean, going back to that part of it, you need to hear from some of these people. And, Herb Fritch is probably the one that comes to mind. Like, he's the one that stands out to me. And that's probably who, if it did happen, we would ultimately hear from at that point. But We'll see what happens on that front. I thought it was a great piece that Adam put together last night on The Athletic. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What do you make of the Preds being swept in the first round against Colorado? How close are they to being contenders, and where do they go from here? That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Puck is brought in, poke checked away. Here come the Predators up from their line. Duchesne, a glove has been lost. Fed to Yossi. That shot stopped. Battle for the rebound. Picked up by Colorado. Sent down from the empty net. MacKinnon scores. And the Avs take a two-goal lead with just under 56 seconds left.
How frustrating to be swept. First time that's happened in franchise history.
Well, it's certainly disappointing for sure. I mean, you know, you come in and you work 82 games to be able to get in the playoffs. And, you know, unfortunately, this series didn't go the way that, you know, we wanted it to go. And the fact that we weren't able to win a game is something that, you know, we all take personal for sure.
That was John Hines after the game last night, a 5-3 loss for the Nashville Predators. Michelle, did the people hear Joe there doing his FanDuel commercial?
I think they heard him for a second, and I was like, what's going on? And then I looked over and I see Joe just da-da-da-da-da, and then I just
yapping away.
Don't see his little red mic, because usually it's red when he mutes. And then I saw you laughing.
Golly. He's still going. He didn't even know we're talking about him right now. It's amazing. Great stuff from Rex Road there.
I think
he
hears
just
us.
Light it up. Taking your thoughts on the Preds. 615-737-1025. Joe, welcome back.
What is happening right now? Well, we made it this far. That was a good run, folks.
Beautiful.
You guys did better at the start.
I know. We're wearing down.
It's kind of like, we're like the Preds season.
Just wearing down as you go down the stretch. We got Chris Mason coming up at 9:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they look ahead here. So one of the things that I'm interested in that I know people don't want to talk about, but I think is really important in this discussion, you know, speaking of ownership, how important is it to them of just making the playoffs? Like, I know as a fan, at some point, and I think we're already there with a lot of fans, but at some point, just making the playoffs isn't good enough. Like, there's got to be a clear path forward to not only making the playoffs, but being able to compete for a Stanley Cup. We talked about it earlier. Like, I understand it's the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we've seen example after example of, hey, just get in and anything can happen. I would much prefer to have a team like the Colorado Avalanche where you get in and you make it happen. And I get, look, they've still got a lot of work to do to prove that they can make a deep run. They've not done that yet to this point. But everybody feels like Colorado is loaded and they're ready to make a run for the Stanley Cup. Tampa Bay is loaded. You know, Florida's loaded. There's a bunch of teams that you feel like on paper you are a Stanley Cup contender. And I understand that doesn't always work out that way. And the Predators have had a couple of teams where it looks like on paper they're a Stanley Cup contender and it doesn't work out in the playoffs. I'd much rather take my chances that way, where you build up to a certain point where that's the category you're in, where on paper you're a Stanley Cup contender. But I do wonder, from an ownership perspective, you just had a couple of pandemic years. It's the NHL anyway, so there's always, you know, an emphasis on making the playoffs and getting revenue that comes along with that. I wonder, from the ownership group's perspective, how important is just making the playoffs and how satisfied are they by just making the playoffs? I'm not saying they don't want to win, because obviously they do, but are the owners freaking out as much as some of the fans are about making the playoffs and being one and done the last 4 years? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that question is. I would love to know what the answer to that question is.
Yeah, well, we talked about this some yesterday, but you remember, you know, this is not – the NHL is not the NFL. They are not just printing money. The TV deal is not just building you – you know, buying you another island every other year. And getting the playoffs is important. It's important for the bottom line. It's important for revenue. You know, I've been texting back and forth with a lot of people during this show, actually, and including with Mark Howard. And, you know, I think a point that he – brought up is, you know, when you talk about blowing things up, blowing it up, right? Just reset and clean house and, you know, go young and I guess try to get yourself into a draft position where you can get a generational player what's the patience level in this particular market compared to some of the more established markets? May not be as long, you know? So I hear a lot of fans right now who are like, and I get it, who are sick of not feeling like this team can really compete, can really make a run, and not enough sweeping changes. But how many of those people as of like year 2, 3, 4 of not sniffing the playoffs would go back and say, wait a minute, actually, I'll take what we had in 2021-22 season. That sounds pretty good right now. It's kind of one of those careful what you wish for situations. And again, it's a bind, and I'm not smart enough to know what the right choice is, but I do think that this core is not going to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, maybe that's like, no duh, dude, but that is what it's about, right? Like if your core and your top players, if you don't think that they're good enough against other top cores of other teams to win it, then you have to do something different, don't you?
I mean, you'd think so. I mean, look, the Predators core a few years ago in 2017, where they made it to the Cup final, and then the next year in 2018, did they have the top end forward talent that we're talking about? I mean, that's what, you know, we spent all day talking about top end forward talent like McKinnon. Like, did they have that? No, they didn't have guys like Nathan McKinnon or Sidney Crosby. And, you know, ultimately in the Cup final, you lost Ryan Johansson and you lost Mike Fisher for a little bit and Kevin Fiala. So that doesn't help. But ultimately, Crosby and Gensel and Malkin and those guys were enough to overcome you in the Stanley Cup final. But the next year, I mean, Johansson played great. Forsberg played great. But they weren't elite-level forwards. So you can do it other ways than that. Like, you don't have to have elite-level forwards to guarantee yourself to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, the St. Louis Blues, Vladdy Tarasenko is a really, really good player. Is he a top 15 forward, top 15 player in the league? I don't think so. So the Blues did it without with depth. Right. And that's what the Predators had. They had some good depth. And right now, I mean, this is the same thing they've really been searching for since Kyle Turris. Now it's a much different scenario now in the way it's shaken out, but they don't have a second line. And whether it's Johansson on the top line with Forsberg and Duchesne, or it's Granlund on the top line with Forsberg and Duchesne, that centerman that's on the second line does not have any reliable wingers. Elie Tolvanen is not a reliable winger. Luke Cunningham's certainly not a reliable winger at this point. And I don't know how you fix that. Like, maybe Philip Tomasino is that guy and he can step into that role next year. Like, I think he's got a chance to take a big jump. Like, is Philip Tomasino a sniper in the league? I think he's more of a playmaker. So I just, that part of it's difficult to figure out because I don't know where the answer depth-wise in the top six is coming from. Like, the Herdline's a great story. Tanner Janot is a great story. Like, I don't know that Tanner Janot is a top six forward. And the Herdline does not need to be your second best offensive line. And this year it was.
Well, to be clear, when I talked about core, I wasn't just talking about forwards either. You know, it's like a core of your best players. What was great about those teams? They had the best D core in the league.
Sure.
What compare this team to that? You got Josi at the absolute top of his game. He's great. He's maybe going to win the Norris. Ekholm, I still think, is very good. I thought Ekholm kind of stepped up offensively some too in these home games and made some plays. But compare like what they were with their top four back then to, you know, Carrier, a little bit of a step back this year. And Fabro's really, I don't know, he's a frustrating player, but there's an area where they clearly have stepped back, you know, from those days. And I think the Blues example is it's a great point. You know, the Blues, I'd say they're a great example of certainly, obviously, a goaltender going nuts, which is sometimes is part of this too. And that's the thing. Look, I mean, you could have a situation one of these springs where you get in like this and you're in a wild card and Soros goes nuts and you make a run. This is possible.
Yeah.
It's just that you don't want to, you know, you don't want to put everything on that. But the Blues team, heavy, tough, and a lot of depth. If you could have like two or three more Janots, okay, then maybe you're talking about something, right?
Yeah.
Because basically, like you said, you've been looking for a second line. You did have the herd line, but then you're just sort of mixing and matching. And plenty of teams don't have much on their fourth line. I get that. But if you can't get the top, top guys, then you certainly have to have more of the good players, and they don't have enough good players.
Yeah, no question about that. Tom in Westmead on the text line says, question about Forsberg. It seems to me he'd be on the third line on the Avs and not first line on most top-end teams. Do you agree? If so, he may not get the money he thinks he can. I don't believe he's worth a premium for us to sign. Look, Philip Forsberg would be a first-line player on Colorado. Now, I think people get
He'd be on one of those two lines.
He'd be on one of the two lines. Like, people get way too caught up in the line numbers. Like, you know, they've got, you know, Valerie Nichushkin is on the top line for Colorado. He had 25 goals, 27 assists this year, 52 points. I mean, it's look, that's a good year. You know, Philip Forsberg had 42 goals. Yes, he could play on the top line for Colorado. Is he Nathan McKinnon? No, and that's the difference. Nathan McKinnon, and that's the other thing, you know, as good as – look, Johansson was really good this year. I think Mikael Granlund was really good this year. Neither one of those two guys are your elite number one center, and that's the other part of this. I mean, think about some of the best players. Auston Matthews, Connor McDavid, Nathan McKinnon, Sidney Crosby. They all play center, and they're all elite, and that's what you're going up against if you're guys like Ryan Johansson and Mikael Granlund. So that's kind of a tough spot to be in at that point. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they were eliminated by the Colorado Avalanche, and look ahead to where the Preds go from here. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week here on Robbie and Rex Road. Time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. C-Mace, what's going on? How are we doing?
Oh, just brewing up some Death Wish coffee right now. I don't know how you guys got up as early as you did.
I think we've been practically zombies the entire show, so there's no telling what we said on this program here today. C-Mace, obviously, you know, a tough loss last night for the Predators, tough series overall. Colorado is a really, really good team, and the Predators get swept for the first time in franchise history. What stood out to you about the series, the difference between these two teams, and what do you think this means for the Predators in terms of how they fit into the big picture here in the Western Conference?
Well, I think, first of all, I just think that you just saw a team that, you know, a typical, you know, maybe not typical anymore, but a 1-8 matchup where, you know, you get a team, the Nashville Predators are scratching and clawing, and they're playing playoff hockey for, you know, the last half of the season, basically, just to get in to the playoffs. And then you have a team that, you know, coasted pretty much the whole year. They had tough stretches. They turned it on when they had to. And then down the stretch, I feel they kind of, you know, they're kind of waiting for the playoffs to start. And it's a team that had, you know, a disappointing exit from the playoffs in the first round last season. And it was a team that they got something to prove. And boy, did they ever. It was just, to me, it looked like, obviously, when you lose, you go into the series without arguably your best player in Saros, you know, Yossi or Saros, take your pick. Your back's up against the wall. It's going to be tough. But it just seemed every time the Predators, obviously game one was, they came out and they blew them out of the water. That was that. But they had a chance to steal one. You need your goalie to give you a performance to steal a game. They got that in Ingram. They just couldn't generate any scoring chances. They couldn't get to the net. Colorado just had too much jump. They skate too well. And the Predators, I just felt like they're out of gas. You know, the kind of hockey that they have to play for as long as they did, they just couldn't keep up with the Avalanche. And they had a couple chances. They win that game. It's a different series. You know, you look at the no goal in game three. And again, they battle. They try everything they possibly can, but the Avalanche were too good. And moving forward, where they are in the Western Conference standings, I mean, I don't look at this season as a disappointment. It sucks they got swept. And if you're inside that room, you know, you give it all you had, and you still lose and get beat pretty bad like that, it's a tough pill to swallow. But, I mean, look at what this team did this season and accomplished. Biggest things for me moving forward, obviously you got to try to re-sign Forsberg. I really feel if they want to, you know, compete and be a legit team that's going to have success in the playoffs, I think Forsberg's number one. I think they need another top six. I think they really missed that in this series. And I think you need a top four defenseman. I think you know, Dante Fabro, I think, is potentially, he has potential to be one. I don't think he's there quite yet, and I think, you know, I thought Carey had an outstanding year. I thought he showed a lot of top four, you know, skill set and everything, but I think, again, the playoffs, they're a big eye-opener for a lot of guys. They played 82 games for the first time, all these guys together. Their only playoff experience for half the team pretty much was last season in the COVID situation, so no, they're a young team, but they definitely have some issues they need to address in the offseason.
Do you think things would have been different, would have looked different, would have been more competitive and possibly even a winnable series had the Preds just won that Arizona game and gotten Calgary instead of Colorado as a matchup?
Ah, don't get me started on that. I have no idea how they didn't do that. And again, I honestly believe, I think if Saros is there, you know, they get either that game that they lost against Calgary with 0.1 seconds, and then you know, the Arizona game. I think it's a completely they got left. They got the worst matchup. Nobody wanted Colorado. Nobody wanted to play the Avalanche, and we just saw why. They're so deep. They're so talented. They're so fast. There's no weakness in their game. Their stars played just as hard as their fourth line. That's a dangerous team. They've got, you know, elite offense, elite superstar offense, two lines that are just loaded up. The top defenseman pair in the entire National Hockey League with Makar and Devon Taves, and their goalies, they didn't even have to be good. They could be average. They were average in that series, and they won. So it was tough. They play Calgary. It's a different series. Look at that series. Dallas, you know, they're right there. And I just feel they match up better. It's too bad. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it, but they had that opportunity, and they kind of swindled that away there at the end of the season. So that's probably one that stings a lot, too, for the guys. But at the end of the day, there's nothing you can do about it now.
Chris Mason on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. So, C. Mace, I agree. I think there's a lot that's happened this year that you're encouraged about if you're the Predators as you move forward. I will say, though, how concerning is it to you that Duchesne, Forsberg, Yossi, all these different guys had career years, and it ended up being good enough for the eighth spot in the regular season and getting swept in the first round? Is that concerning at all if you're the Predators, that you're trying to evaluate yourself and get better moving forward, that, I mean, what are the chances that all of those guys are having career years again next year?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I wonder that too. I feel that, you know, those guys, you just, I guess, I don't know, you mature at different times and you kind of have an understanding of who you are and or who you need to be as a player, and it doesn't really matter when it happens, if it happened. But I always feel that those guys, I'm sure you guys did, have the ability to have these kind of seasons, but they just haven't been able to put it together. And I don't know if it's a consistency, just not committed, you know, entirely to play in the right way. I feel this year there was full engagement, you know, all season long. And I hadn't seen that from either of those, if you're talking Duchesne and Forsberg, in the prior years, and fitting in and getting the right guys to play with. And I feel that it's a repeatable performance for those guys if they, you know, can continue to play like that with that edge and, kind of being like a hybrid power forward where they play hard and they go into hard areas and they commit to playing the game that way. I feel that can be repeatable. I think there's a lot of young players that have better. So they're young, they're learning the league. I think they're going to be better. And, you know, but you do wonder, can everybody have, like, I don't think Roman Yossi is going to have 96 points.
Yeah, no, I mean it's kind of amazing, you know, just some of the individual achievement and then, you know, the way things turned out, which is, you know, you mentioned it, C-Mace, earlier, you know, were they worn out? I mean, if you go back to March, this team was still in position in that month to possibly still get second place in the division and host a playoff series, and then it, you know, from once the calendar flipped to April and still well before Saros got hurt, it started to me like their performances just were, especially in, you know, defensively, not as good. Why do you think that is?
I wouldn't say they overachieved. I thought they played the best they could have played for a long stretch. And I think they got in a groove and you get on a roll and you just keep going and you're, I think the biggest reason, I think, for that, they obviously scored a lot of goals, but you had a goaltender who, he was the top goaltender in the league in goals saved above average. That means you're giving up a lot of scoring chances. And I think when you have a goaltender, I don't know if they've announced it. I've heard that they're announcing in Kevin Weeks' report yesterday that Saros is going to be a finalist for the Vezina, which I'm over
it's
the
official,
moon.
Yeah.
That means
yep.
That he did? He get it?
Yeah. He's a finalist for officially, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that's good. So that tells me that people are they're doing the research and they're paying attention to the situations because there are guys with better numbers. I'm kind of shocked that Frederik Andersen didn't get it, but I think he's obviously a huge reason. And we saw what he did the season before, the last half of the season. He can carry a team, and when you have that, and then you have your guys scoring goals. You know, Tanner Janot got over 20. Trenton almost got 20. You know, a lot of different guys step up and have big years. Your star guys, Johansson puts up a bunch, and obviously we know what Forsberg and Duchesne did. So I thought they were able to win a lot of hockey games like that, and they're playing hard. And I just think at the end of the season, it just the way that they played with that brutality and that physicality, and it was just you 82 games of working as absolutely as hard as you can and just playing a really taxing style of play for some of these guys. And it's not that I don't think they could do it next year. It's that a lot of these guys haven't done it for 82 games. I don't think Forsberg and Duchesne, they played 82 game seasons, but I don't think they've played that way for an entire season. So, and then, Roman Josi, I think even he got tired, which is crazy because I think a lot of times when the team struggles, he feels like he has to, do more and take it on himself and single-handedly do it. And, and that's taxing. So I just think that they just eventually slowly ran out of steam, and then you ran into the worst team possible when you don't have, all the juice and jam in the tank and to play as a Colorado Avalanche, and especially to play the way that the Predators did. And funny enough, I thought last night, I thought they actually got to that game, and it was probably their best stretch of hockey. And they got the Avs hemmed and running around a little bit, and they're hitting them, and they're kind of getting them off their game. And once again, though, you take a penalty and you give them a chance, they come back and they can elevate their game. They push back. I felt that was a big difference in the series too. I think is timely penalties and just giving them the opportunity to take over the game, and it ended up costing them almost every time.
Yep, no question about it. Well, C-Mace, great stuff as always. We appreciate you joining us today and all year long. Appreciate your coverage as well on Bally Sports, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay, good morning, guys, and thank you guys so much. It's always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Chris Mason, thanks, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, Preds TV analyst, joins us every week at 9:30 on Tuesday morning. We'll come back. We'll get your final thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Chris Mason for joining us in the last segment. Joe, we'll have a lot of time this week to kind of break down where the Preds go from here and really on an individual basis with some of their players as well. We've gotten a lot of reaction today on the show. We appreciate everybody's participation and have a lot more coming tomorrow as Preds players talking later today. I think around 5 o'clock is when they'll start talking at Bridgestone Arena. So looking forward to that coming up later today. I'm sure we'll hear from John Hines and David Poile a little bit later this week as well. There's a couple of interesting things as we wrap up today's discussion on the Predators that I'm interested in moving forward. Obviously, the Forsberg contract, that speaks for itself. We've talked a lot about that today. Number two, how do the Predators view Luke Cunnan, and how do they view Eli Tolvanen? You've got Tolvanen signed to a contract that's really not a lot of money. There's this idea out there that the Predators could trade him this offseason, and I guess that maybe they could. I don't think you're getting very much for him at all at this point. And honestly, with the amount of money that he's being paid, I would rather just keep him around and see if you can develop him and see if he can snap back into an offensive player that you thought he could be, because the money is just not that much for Eli Tolvanen. I'm very interested on the Luke Cunnan part because there seems to be, I think, a disconnect between the way I view Luke Cunnan, the way I think a lot of the fans view Luke Cunnan, and the way that John Hines views Luke Kunin. Adam Vingan, I thought, had a good question about that after game three. And Hines' answer was basically, you know, he does a lot of things that we value here and that his teammates value, even if the production's not there. And all that's great. He's not a top six forward. And to see Mace's point in the last segment, whether or not Philip Forsberg is back, I still think even if he's back, you need to go find another top six forward this offseason, whether that's via trade or whether that's via a free agency. Luke Kunin's a restricted free agent. And I'm really interested to see how that goes because, you know, contract-wise, he's making right around two right now. I think it may be 2.3. I have no idea what the next contract for him is going to look like. I'm not paying him much more than he's getting right now, for sure, if I'm the Predators. I'm very interested to see how they view him moving forward.
Yeah, I think part of the Luke Kunin situation is also it's a reflection of – I mean, I agree there's a disconnect. I mean, I think Hines has been asked a few times, and he probably gave the most elaborate answer the other day, but – I mean, he said more than once, right? He likes how he plays. He's responsible, all these things. But it's also a reflection of where they are. Like, the fact that he would be a top six forward all year for you tells you, you know, that this roster needs some work. I know it's a flawed stat, but, you know, he's minus 11 on the year, which is the second worst on the team. Only Benning, minus 24, is worse. Again, flawed stat, but you got 13 goals. You got 22 points in 82 games. That's not close to his top six forward. So,
and then it's the penalties too. Like he got on this roll toward the end of the season where not only was he not scoring, he's taking penalties left and right in the offensive zone and there's stick fouls. Like, and I get it. Penalties were a problem for the whole team. So it's probably unfair to just single out Luke Kunin there, but it felt like Luke Kunin was going to the box a lot toward the end of the year.
Agree. And then with Tolvanen, it's, well, I'm with you. Like, what are you getting? I mean, I think, if you know, whatever you're doing, you know, whether you're really rebuilding or you're going to be able to sign Forsberg and you're trying to just, you know, build around that, I think more likely than not, you're just really, really hoping Tolvanen comes around at this point. At some point, that ends. But I still think your chance of a return is higher. You have a, you know, like the ceiling is higher on the return probably. Waiting him out and hoping that the 6 weeks or whatever it was last year is really him and he can have a great offseason and at least be a, you know, a factor on the power play and a 20 goal scorer for you. I still think you're better off hoping for that, frankly. Hope is what it is, than moving him, because you're not getting much at this point.
No. And look, I know there's this idea out there that, you know, the Predators moved on too soon from Kevin Fiala. And look, maybe they did. David Poile talked about it the time he got traded of, you know, you probably look back one day and Kevin Fiala is a really good player in this league. And that day has come. I don't know. I don't know if I get that same vibe from Tolvanen. I mean, I thought he was okay when he was in there in the series against Colorado, but there's just not anywhere near enough flashes from him, especially this year, to make me think that he's just all of a sudden going to break out and become some 35-goal scorer next year. Now, having said that, if you'd have told me coming into the year that Matt Duchene would end up with 43 goals, I would have told you were nuts. But so I guess anything could happen as they move forward, but I am really down on Elie Tolvanen, and this is an important – about as important of an offseason for him as it gets, because if he comes back next year and it's more of the same – and there's just virtually nothing going on out there offensively, then I don't know what you do at that point if you're the Predators, because the trade value won't be there, and he's not going to be the guy that you think he's going to turn into at that point. This is a huge offseason for him.
Yeah, and of course the difference there, not that anyone should have expected 30, let alone 40, is Duchene at least had a track record of being a top forward in the NHL, you know, and Tolvanen doesn't have that. So, and by the way, on – and there's just so many different aspects of this conversation, and I think we've hit it pretty well over 4 hours. But, you know, Duchene, again, if we're going to talk about John Hines, I don't see how you can look at Duchene this year. But a lot of people on the text line are like, who cares about individual achievement? You know, it's about the team. I agree, but the point being, as a coach still, like with each player, I mean, you're trying to get the most out of them, put them in the best positions find something at times, help them improve. I don't see how you can look at Matt Duchene here and not give John Hines some credit for it. I think if you don't, then you're just resolved that John Hines is a bad coach and you want anybody else. And I don't think that's the right way to look at this. Hey, if you can get Barry Trotz, get Barry Trotz.
Yeah.
Okay. No one would argue with that, but I have my doubts that that will be an option for the Nashville Predators.
And we'll see what happens on that front the next few days. Got Philip Forsberg and the players talking a little bit later today coming up at 5 o'clock. So we'll have you covered tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on anything they might say that's of note. We'll see if Forsberg wants to address his contract situation at all. I kind of have my doubts that there will be much there, but we'll see what happens on that front. That's going to do it for us here today on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. They'll have your complete reaction to game number 4 yesterday between the Preds and the Avalanche and where the Preds go from here as well. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.